The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
This is Kevin Wallace for NBC 5 News, your place.
It is open phones on Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday, and that means that, gosh, we can dig into most anything we've been talking about this morning, anything else we've ever talked about. And in this particular case, Mr. X, Ed, a good friend of mine who, of course, has been battling the administrative state and has forgotten more about it than I'll probably ever know. Ed, you wanted to respond a bit here, that conversation I had with Herman Bertschinger about Senate Bill 762, the fire, the wildfire mapping debacle. It's just an atrocious, atrocious piece of legislation. And, of course, we also have to pick the scab that was pushed by Senator Jeff Golden and Pam Marsh. But there we go. What's on your mind?
Well, what sticks in my craw, Bill, is the news reports from the past couple days. Yesterday, you know, they were talking, the legislature is looking at why there were so many fires, so much acreage burnt, and all of these things combined. And it comes down to the things that we've exposed on your show and the use of Oregon State University. Now, they made the university a state agency, okay?
That's right.
That's the first problem. It has no business being an agency of the state. We were the only state in the country that did that, okay? And it was done basically to help implement SB 100, to move to sustainable development.
I mean, it was about, in other words, having the university run everything about sustainable development is how you get the agenda pushed because of the state agency, the agency-to-government relationship, the direct relationship, right?
Well, I want to say that in a different term so people can understand.
Okay.
It was about melding the academics that didn't have a foundation in law to tell us what government should be doing and making it commonplace. And what do we fight every day for the past 20 years, more and more and more, is these ridiculous intrusions into our life. But yet you go back to, and I remember from a kid, there was big studies that I did into this, and reality, government contracting always had regulations, rules, every aspect of it. You had to have a certain resume of successful endeavors to be considered. You had bonding, you had this, you had that.
Well, and you also had to bid for the contract. You also had to bid for the contract,
exactly.
And you had to have a performance. In other words, performance benchmarks, certain, and not everybody was qualified to be able to bid on it. So the question you're posing, I think, is fascinating. What qualifies the Oregon University system to be the contractor on such matters?
Well, and I want to deepen that question because that is one of the questions, Bill. But the other question is, who are the people preparing the maps? Is it a group of professors? I don't believe so, because all the research I did showed that they were using students. So now, again, we have untrained students that are students. Now, by nature, they're not qualified.
Now, this is what Herman was referring to with that meeting with the Gen Z guy behind his computer. Now, nothing wrong with being of Generation Z, but generally speaking, you are young and inexperienced in such matters, correct?
Sure. They have not interned. They've not spent time in the real world. They don't know anything about the real world problems that come about. And the reality to it is, are we, you know, my thing on it is, to Herman, I wanted to try to get on when he was, have they looked at this aspect? What are the actual laws? Because you're interfacing federal lands, federally managed lands. Now, so in other words, they're trying to create fire mapping for what's a public trust. Now, and my question is, are they qualified to do it? And I think all of the evidence shows that they are not qualified to do it and that they're violating fundamental foundational rules and regulations, laws about how the usage of this interacts with the public.
Might there be a possibility then of getting the law or suing not on the basis of harm, in other words, having to wait for people to be damaged, but actually suing the state of Oregon based on the fact that the Oregon University system has no qualifications to do what it's been tasked to do?
I would look at it, and logically I would see that there could be an injunction issued if it was brought correctly in front of a court. And put them on hold because they violated the basic tenet of our country. I mean, this to me, this is, when I look at it, I've discussed this before, but all you have to do, okay, is look at the pattern of wildfire around the world and understand this, okay? If you type in, and it's typical Google search, go to Canada, go to Stakeholder Trust of Canada on their wildfire policies, and you will find the Canadian wildfires were big again this year. They were big last year. They were poisoning our air on this side of the border. The main stakeholder in their wildfire policy and wildfire program was Oregon State University.
Oh.
And it's done in three countries. It's Canada, United States, and Australia.
So Oregon State University, the Oregon University system is essentially the expert at being incompetent then, tasked with creating horrible wildfire plan, not just in Oregon, not just in the United States, but around the Western world from the sounds of it, as you're describing it.
Well, what I'm looking at is the reality of their involvement comes down to interagency coordination and cooperation with every federal, state, and international agency to implement this sustainable development thing of wildfire or forest fire. Because they're not wildfires. If you look at it, all they do is map out and create prescribed fire patterns.
Yeah, yeah, the natural ignition occurs, let it burn, right?
That's right.
Okay. So would the line of attack then be, now what about this one, Ed? I'm not an attorney, but I know you study a lot of legal documents. What about attacking the very basis of the legislature making the Oregon University system a state agency? Because it is an educational agency. It's nothing that's, that has any particular innate expertise on managing forests or on managing land or managing anything else other than the educational process. And even then, they arguably don't do a great job.
I would think that they're arguably, you could look at it and say you can define their plan as one is driving people out of the rural lands. Because like one of your callers, he has 45 acres out in Eagle Point. He keeps his land pristine. And now he has to battle, even though he's taking the effort and he has no way to fight this off. This is absolutely absurd.
Ed, I appreciate the call, and it's very thought-provoking, and it gives a possible avenue of attack, all right? We'll continue that conversation. Ed, thanks for the call. It's 20 minutes after 8. Coming up, more of your calls. It's Pebble on your Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. I imagine you may have a boulder or two after the conversation of the last hour or two. Kim Commando, Digital Update, then more of your calls coming up.
This hour of the Bill Meyer Show is brought to you by Johnson Builders, Southern Oregon.
AT&T Starter and Verizon Welcome. Plan benefits vary. See details. Capable device required for Scam Shield. Turning on Scam Block. My Block calls you on. Disable.
Hear KMED in Grants Pass on 105.9 K290 AF Rogue River in South Jackson County on 106.7 K294 AS Ashland.
24 after 8, open phones on Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday, and of course, my guilty pleasure Tuesday with more Turtles music. That along with more cowbell, give me more Turtles music, and that way I can make it through this bizarre, dystopian kind of political realm. All right, Bob Hayworth is here. Hey, Bob, you have a pebble in your shoe. Go ahead. Let's hear it.
Yep. This is Miner Dave.
Oh, Dave, I thought that was... hang on, I'll get to your pebble in a second. Maybe Bob is here. Is this Bob? Good morning.
You got me now.
Okay, good. Okay. Yeah, I just pushed the wrong button. I didn't write it down. So anyway, you have a pebble in your shoe. Let's go ahead and hear that.
I'm curious. The Jay Austin commercial that you run, a very nice presentation. I love the girl's, the way she sings. Mm-hmm. But what are the first two lines of that song? I can't understand. Something about petrol and Russia. I don't know what she's saying.
Okay, here we go. Let me play a little bit of that just for fun. Okay, here we go. I just found the ad.
Saudis dropped the petrol. Times are changing fast.
Okay.
Russia, China, BRICS, they're shaking off the past.
Okay, so here we go. I think I got it. All right.
Saudis drop the petrol, times are changing fast.
Saudis drop the petrol, times are changing fast. That's the petrodollar, okay? So They drop the petrodollar.
Saudis drop the petro. Okay. Times are changing fast.
And then
Russia, China, BRICS. They're shaking off
the past. Russia, China, BRICS. In other words, the BRIC countries, you know, out there, okay, that are shaking off the past. So there we go. That's how it goes.
Okay.
All right?
All right. Thank you very much.
See, you made me listen closely to it, and so now I can answer that because I wasn't sure. I just knew. I just kind of sang along with it. You know, Jay Austin Company.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Well, thanks for emptying my shoe.
All right. Glad to be able to help out a pebble in the shoe problem. Now, let me go to – now, Dave was here. Dave, we had you on a moment ago. Go ahead. What's your pebble?
Yeah, well, last week I had my brake shoe that I had the brakes done. Turned out I needed a new drum, so got it replaced, mm-hmm, stuck in Hornbrook for 3 days, sleeping in the truck. And then
Oh, no, that sounds like that old CCR song, Stuck in Hornbrook, right? Instead of Stuck in Lodi, right?
Yeah. Hmm. And then I got home, and now I got two flat tires.
Oh, and, man.
Right? And because they're 15 light truck tires, right, you can only get new ones.
Oh, yeah.
Can't get used ones.
So these are 15 inches, right?
They're 15 inches.
Yeah, there are not many of them. Not many 14, 15-inch tires still being made at the moment other than new ones. Yeah, you're right.
Right. Yeah, I can get new ones, but they're $150 a tire, so I need two of them. But really, I need three of them because I have one brand new one.
Okay.
My brother bought me.
All right, I have a solution for you. I'll get in contact with a cartel organ harvesting scheme. If you can just give up a kidney, I'm sure we can get your a tire or two.
No, you don't want my kidneys because I might need one.
Oh, darn, I'll tell you, that's going to be tough then. What can you sell?
Nothing. I could sell ideas. I could be an idea man. I could sell those.
Get in line, buddy. Get in line. I'm sorry. I wish I could help. What about your brother? Is your brother cut you off now?
No, I don't. This is just a little bit much for me to ask him.
Oh.
I wouldn't do that to him. But, well, when I get next month, I'll have the money to buy the tires. It's just, I have to wait till next month.
All right, so they're light truck 15. What's the size of your tire? Maybe somebody can help out Minor Dave. What's the size of your tire on your truck?
Well, they're 15s. They're light truck tires. Let me look at the new one because that'll be the size that
like 235 15 or whatever LT.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm going to look because I've had they're P235. SR75R15.
Okay, 235 SR75 LT15s. Got it. Okay.
Light truck.
It has to be light truck rated, so it has higher strength. Got it. All right.
Right.
If anybody has a couple hanging around that you could spare for Dave, get in touch. We'll let you know. Good luck on that, Dave. You know, whatever we can do to help out problems. Pebbles in the shoe, right? Good morning. Hi, who's this? Welcome.
Bill, it's your friend Brad. Good morning to you. Thanks for having such a great show. I always enjoy it when you have Herman on. So,
yeah, I enjoy having Herman on too, Brad. So how is life over at Builders, or is this Brad as a civilian in this case?
Well, it's a little bit of both today. So, you know, the thing that you get and Herman gets is it's the power of the administrative state once it gets – I mean, it's like a dog let off the leash. Once you let a dog off the leash, that dog's just going to go be a dog. And that's what you see with this administrative overreach that came out of Senate Bill 762. This rulemaking and the mapping and all of this is just the absolute worst example of what you get when you put a small group of people, which is all you have here. You have a very, very small group of people involved in the rulemaking and the mapping that impact the whole rest of the state.
I think Ed, though, Mr. X, who was on a few minutes ago, brings up an interesting point, like who put the Oregon State University system for some reason in charge and like saying that this is the best possible people that you should have even doing something like this if you were to try to accomplish a wildfire map. What do you think about that?
Yeah, Ed makes a great point, but the point that he doesn't make is that every single policy decision that the state of Oregon makes always comes out of the state educational system, usually Portland State University. Portland State University is always where all the data comes from for population planning, for forecasts, for all of it.
But that's only, though, done because of the state university state agency or the agency relationship that it tends to have its power. If we were, if it could be decertified or de-agency-fied, wouldn't that help somewhat if it were no longer an agency?
Yeah, what a great idea to actually put professional experienced people in charge of these processes, this research that affects, you know, the 4.2 million people who live in Oregon. You know, when the original fire map came out, it was so bad that Jeff Golden left and went to Germany. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember
that. He was running against Randy Sparacino, and people were getting non-renewal notices on it. It was so bad that Jeff Golden actually left and went to Germany and didn't come back until the dust had settled. which is why I remind people it is so important to be part of the process. Bill, I'm going to remind you something that you know. 2010, and I've got the numbers for you right here. This is how close it was. 24,550 votes for Dr. Alan Bates, 24,275 votes for Dave Daughter. Dave Daughter, who is currently serving as Jackson County Commissioner, missed defeating Alan Bates by only 276 votes. 276 votes in that election. We probably never would have gotten a Jeff Golden. We would have never gotten Senate Bill 762. We would have never had all kinds of ridiculously progressive, anti-business, crazy stuff that we're all dealing with in this state for the lack of 276 votes back in 2010.
And I would imagine that there were many Republicans or people who have common sense who just didn't vote in that election.
But this fire thing is just the baseball bat that the progressives are using to swing on behalf of the policy stuff that they want to get done. You raise up something that everybody is afraid of, and then you use that as the heavy blunt object to start getting your way on all this other policy stuff. It's, oh, this fire stuff, boy, it's sure bad. Well, we better do this and do that and do the other. This fire mapping, I'm telling you, it's taking land out of inventory. I won't bore you with all the details. I just
My concern ultimately here on this, besides the obvious that we've beaten to death here for quite some time, is that under the guise of, oh my gosh, they're not going to the people are rising up, they're rebelling against us over this fire map, they'll just come up with something that still accomplishes most of what they're trying to do, which is depopulate the rural lands, but enough that people go to sleep on it. In other words, instead of just being ripped out of the roots and destroyed, they're going to try to modify it. And that's what bothers me most of all here, because they have no business doing what they're trying to do on this one, Brad.
And Bill, you know the answer to this question. What started those fires that caused all these policy discussions to happen? What started those fires, Bill?
I would dare say, not knowing for sure, but I would say the vast majority of them came from federal lands.
Yeah, well, and here in our Alameda fire, you know, again, everybody conveniently.
That was arson. That was arson.
It was largest loss of housing by fire in the state of Oregon, arson caused fire. Why do we even call that a wildfire? Why don't we just call it what it is? It's the largest loss of largest fire loss of housing by arson in Oregon state history. It wasn't a wildfire. It was an arson fire. Why don't we say that? Mm-hmm. Because that doesn't help you get policy stuff done.
All right. Hey, Brad, I want to shift gears on you just a little bit, ask your opinion on something. Now, I know you're with the Builders Association, so you got a dog in the fight. You know that four-story pack-and-stack low-income housing that they're trying to get state money for, which, of course, I'm not a fan of, because I look at this as just the standard grifting and the standard grift designed to bail out property owners and various other things. But that being said, is there an agenda there other than just affordable housing? Is this, because it's not by the climate-friendly, equitable community boundary, is it or is it not? That one over by Les Schwab on Central.
Yeah. Well, it kind of is. It helps.
It's Liberty Park, Liberty Park area.
Yeah. So part of the compliance part of climate-friendly equitable communities is you have to identify climate-friendly areas for maximum densification. So anything that densifies the climate-friendly area, and that is in Medford's defined climate-friendly area.
Oh, it is. Okay, see, that's what I'm getting at. When you're talking about a four-story stack-and-pack low-income, that qualifies that.
So I'm not looking at the Medford map right now, but in my mind's eye, I'm kind of looking at it, and I'm thinking that is within Medford's defined climate-friendly area. So any construction that occurs, any construction that you can do, and CFAC requires that 30% of all growth happens in your climate-friendly defined area.
Which means that we have to build 30% of our growth then as low income, which I'm sure is going to help with tourism downtown that we're told about.
Well, Bill, you know, you really make an awfully good point here. Here's the thing. Why do we work hard, right? Why do we work? In other words, you go to work every day. You work very hard. Why? To benefit your family. That's why most of us do it, so that you can do what? So that your kids can go to a good school, so that they can live in a nice home, so that you can be in a nice, safe neighborhood. So the more you densify, the more you.
But they're not densifying with people who are producing a lot of income and are being taxed a lot and paying a lot of taxes. They want to densify with poor people. And not that I have any axe to grind against poor people, but poor people downtown are a cost on the system here, Brad.
Right. So you make an excellent point, and so I'm going to ask the question that you already know the answer to. What happens to property values where densification, like you just described, is occurring?
Goes down.
Property values in those areas.
It goes down. It has to go down. It's like everything's going to be like what? What's the Bum and Fire Palace downtown? The one that used to be the hotel. You know, the green one. What was that called again?
Yeah.
You know, think of what a great place that was at one place, and now it's a hellhole, in my opinion. Because of essentially bumdom and fire victims forever, for whatever reason, and drug addicts and various other things. And this seems like institutionalized destruction. And if the county, and if the city of Medford, you know, goes all in for this one, yeah, it may help out Daniel Bunn and, you know, pay off his property or whatever the case might be. But that, does that really help the city of Medford? That's what I'm asking, and I know, you know, this could be uncomfortable for you being in the Builders Association.
Well, you know, again, we work on these policy pieces, and a lot of the time, our legislators, certain legislators, don't listen to us. But Bill, you make a really good point, and this is a point that I often make: is one of the great things about home construction is that we take low-value land, low-value bare land, we build improvements on it. Those improvements raise the property tax value, and the property tax value is what pays for police, fire. 80% of education is paid for by property tax.
And that's what I'm getting at, though. And having a bunch of low-income housing is not necessarily enhancing the tax base, or am I wrong about that somehow? Tell me where I'm wrong.
You know, Bill, you're kind of rubbing up against the dark underbelly of development. Is what happens when development is incentivized that is actually revenue negative or property tax negative to the community that's getting built in?
And by the way, if it's being constructed by a nonprofit, it's off the rolls. And so ultimately here. You know, if downtown Medford, if they're looking to develop downtown Medford and have it be that climate-friendly thing and be tourism-friendly and all the rest of it, they need wealthy professionals moving downtown.
But it's not Dan Bunn's fault, and it's not the city of Medford's fault. The problem is the city has no choice but to comply with this climate-friendly, equitable communities rulemaking.
Okay, under what law? Because this is an executive order from a governor who's out on our ass.
Correct.
Now. She's gone.
Correct. Yeah. So it's an executive order that she gave to the Department of Land Conservation and Development, who promulgated the rules, who put an anti-car activist named Evan Manville in charge of the rulemaking committee that came up with all this stuff. But once those rules come out, the jurisdictions that are covered, and Medford's one of the jurisdictions that are covered, they only have two things that they can do. They can either comply or they cannot comply. And if they don't comply, then they have to go up against Ellen Rosen, our attorney general, go up against her 1,200 attorneys that she's got up there in Salem. So it put our cities in a horrible position of potentially doing, as you're pointing out, cities having to do things that are really not in the city's best overall interest.
All right. Well,
isn't it? Yeah.
But the city council still votes to approve this. They're part of the problem.
I can tell you the city council doesn't like it. The mayor doesn't like it.
But they're still voting for it. But if they vote for it, they're still
they can only vote for things that are in compliance with their planning code, and if it meets all the conditions of the planning code, it's hard to say no, Bill.
All right, Brad. I know I kind of took you far afield from where you first called in on. Okay, but thank you for the call. Okay, I got to roll because I'm almost out of time. It's 8:41 at KMED, and this is the Bill Myers Show.
Hi, this
Bill wants to hear from you. 541-770-5633. That's 770-KMED.
And portion of the program sponsored by Valley View Nursery, the only nursery with online pricing. Go to valleyviewnursery.com, and they are closer than you think, all right? Whew. Man, I got to tell you, let's talk with Logan. Hey, Logan, what's on your mind?
Hey, Bill. Thanks for calling a spade a spade.
In what respect?
What's going on downtown with the agenda? If you follow, there's two key phrases here that everyone needs to remember when they're voting. Number one is follow the money. And the second is beware of wolves in sheep clothing. Because there are an elite few, and you actually said one of the names, look into Rubicon Investments. These businesses are profiting. And you ask the question, why are our mayor and our city councilors still voting for this stuff? And the bottom line is, if you look into the tax records, a lot of them are not. So we need to get good leadership in that knows how to say no and won't take a bribe that can't be bought.
And by the way, I want to credit Kurt Ankerberg. He's the one who told me about the Daniel Bunn thing. But, I don't even want to go, in that direction right now, okay? But I just want to make sure that people understand. It is irritating that, we're told that tourism is the way to go, first off here, Logan. And then at the same time, we're going to fill downtown with essentially low-income non-taxpayers. And
there's an agenda, yeah, and these people are lining their pockets off it. If you follow the money, it's all right there. I appreciate you bringing it to light because people are just unaware or asleep at the wheel. So thanks for bringing it to light, Bill.
Okay, I appreciate the call. Let me go to Al in the Applegate. Hello, Al. Go ahead.
Yeah, Bill, I've been stewing on this for a while. I think that we need to get a Republican representative to propose a Cascadia Megathrust Earthquake Risk Assessment Map, where everything on the coast is bright red, and any place that has dense infrastructure like Portland, Salem, Eugene, Ashland, and like Jacksonville, downtown Grants Pass, where the old masonry buildings are, they get bright red because they're coming down, and that would change the complexion of where Oregonians should live. The rural areas are going to be the places that are going to survive the best, and places that are dense with infrastructure.
Real Americans, so okay, you're trying to burn down the rural area. Okay, we're going to burn down your, or we're going to tumble down your city with the risk assessment map of your city. I love it. I absolutely love it. Yeah. I don't know if it's going to happen, but why not? Right? Gosh, it's irritating. Thank you, Al. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Morning, Bill. Bob Shannon in Medford.
Oh, hey, Bob. How you doing?
Hey. Good. I gave you a pearl earlier. We'll get to some quick boulders. Being a 47-year resident of the Liberty neighborhood in my modest house, Lauren was right. Brad Beddington was wrong. Mayor and council are all in on this, on the big grift and making money off of poor people. Yeah, how climate equitable is putting a stack 'em and pack 'em for poor people next to a railroad track, next to a tire shop, next to commercial industrial, across from a three-lane small highway? It's BS, and it was from the get-go, the inception, which I have been part of in a rubber stamp committee called the Medford Urban Renewal Community Advisory Committee. We can spend a lot of time talking about how it got to where it is. I want to put out there that also, you know, they're looking at a downtown centralized fire station. They're looking at Hawthorne Park and some other areas in the future. I think that location there next to Les Schwab, if they need a centralized downtown fire station, would be the best thing to go with that. And, you know, the poor people stack them and pap them, it ain't going to work. It's just making money and consolidating low-income people in one area. You know, what are the kids going to do? Walk across three lanes of traffic to go to the micro park that is Liberty Park? That is what we're named after. I'd rather call this the Liberty neighborhood than the Liberty Park area. That was some propaganda put on by Brian Shotoon to make it sound really great and wonderful. And there's a long history of this neighborhood and the city grifting with the good old boy network of who's going to make money off of who for what. And I don't know how deep you want to go into it or how much time we have.
We don't right now, but it's a continuing thing. But so yeah. I had suspected, though, that that was part of climate-friendly, equitable community, which, of course, as we know, is essentially the 15-minute prison city, okay?
And they are not forced to do anything. The city of Medford is not, well, we have to do this because of this. No, they have to do it because
the most powerful word that the...
Somebody's going to make money off of it.
The most powerful word in society, especially in government, though, is no. And
yeah.
And there is always a choice, and the choice is not to have to vote yes on everything that the state is trying to do to us, okay?
Well, our elected officials don't quite get that, do they?
Yeah, well, especially when there's grant stream funding involved with it, okay? Thank you, Bob. Let me grab one more here. Good morning. Hi, KMED. Hello? Going once, going twice. Oh, you got to listen to the phone. You lost your shot.
This hour of the Bill Myers Show is brought to you by Johnson Builders, Southern Oregon's leading authority on post-frame and steel buildings for over 20 years.
I'm Bill Payne, sending a shout-out to Stephen Westfall Roof.
Prairie tickets for the 21st. Code word DOUBLE at checkout. Must be 21 years or over.
You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
It's 8:54. Speaking of, you know, we've been talking a lot about state university systems. UW Medicine, somehow I got on their email list. I don't know how. They sent me something which I thought was quite interesting. And if you are a fan of the Second Amendment, and I know I am, I think you might find this interesting. UW Medicine News. Density of gun shops linked to areas suicides by firearms. So this is the next attack on the pesky Second Amendment here. Julie Kafka conducted a study as a postdoctoral research fellow at the University of Washington Medicine Firearm Injury and Policy Research Program in Seattle. And the study authors suggest that reducing the concentration of gun shops or enlisting them in prevention efforts might reduce firearm suicides. Firearm suicides are more common in areas with more gun shops, according to this new study. The findings suggest that it might be possible to reduce firearm suicide deaths by reducing the number of gun shops in communities or enlisting gun shop owners once again to participate in suicide prevention initiatives, according to the study's lead author. Huh. So this is kind of interesting. You know, that pesky Second Amendment thing, all we have to do then to reduce suicides in would be to close gun stores, right? Reduce the number of them. And, of course, you would also reduce the number of weapons available for Second Amendment purposes. But I'm sure that is not but you know, once again, this is a no doubt left-wing political source known as a University of Washington. Can you imagine them using the same sort of attitude on all sorts of other issues there? Like instead of getting everybody into the physician for a $1,000 a month Ozempic shot, maybe you just end up saying, you know, we're just going to have to reduce the number of fast food restaurants or restaurants in general, because you know, you Americans, you're just kind of getting too fat and you're just enjoying a little bit too much of that freedom sort of stuff. And or else the only kind of burgers that you're allowed to have are maybe Hay burgers, just Hay burgers, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, I can't. Yeah, everything's about control, right? Another interesting health story that I was looking at. I might talk more about this tomorrow. I really might talk about this more tomorrow. But in the Epic Times here, they had an article, Vitamin D Dilemma, New Guidelines Flip the Script on Sunshine Supplements. They're actually saying that they don't think people should be tested for vitamin D as much, even though the studies have shown that, gosh, Americans way, way low on most vitamin D. They're just saying that, and this is the Endocrine Society 2024 Clinical Practice Guideline on vitamin D. They're actually trying to tell people, oh, you really shouldn't get your vitamin D checked all that often. And then you start wondering, okay, where's the agenda in something like that, right? And then the more I think about it, well, I'm kind of going down the Ozempic sort of thing. If you're the Endocrine Society and you're a bunch of endocrine doctors and people are able to take care of a lot of their problems by making sure that they're supplemented and that they have a good supply of vitamin D3 in their bloodstream, even I was a slave to it during the COVID time there, and even I was only on the low side of normal. What do you think would be the upside of this? The Endocrine Society is probably looking at vitamin D studies and then saying, boy, you know, vitamin D is cheap. Well, if they're coming for hormone treatments from endocrinologists, that makes us money. Bet me? And it's not even Conspiracy Theory Thursday. All right, I got to go. We'll watch the debate tonight. We'll talk about that tomorrow and a bunch more. And to continue to go down who's getting what grift what day, okay? Email Bill at BillMaierShow.com.
Rule number one, if you're looking to sell a home, choose a local real estate agent. Hey, it's Lars. And why? It starts with an overall knowledge of the area. But even more importantly, a local agent is a friend and neighbor who cares about the community just as much as you do. In